KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS Falls Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. A growing number of states are working to extend their laws regulating high-interest loan operations to tribal land. Minnesota just forced one online enterprise connected to a Wisconsin tribe to stop doing business in that state. But tribes see what states are doing as an encroachment on their sovereign right to expand economic development. We'll look at the balance between harmful high-interest loans and tribal sovereignty right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. More than 20 tribal organizations are urging the Trump administration to respect tribal sovereignty and uphold treaty and trust responsibilities. The coalition sent a letter to President Donald Trump, the Interior Secretary, and members of Congress on Sunday. This follows actions by the administration in Trump's first 2 weeks in office, including a canceled memo which sought to freeze federal loans and grants. The letter states that recent orders are raising concerns among tribes and tribal organizations, including urban Indian organizations across the country, which provide healthcare, education, economic development, and other services to tribal communities. The organizations say questions remain about how federal agencies will interpret and implement the administration's executive orders and policies moving forward. The National Indian Health Board, the National Congress of American Indians, and the American Indian Higher Education Consortium are among the groups which sent the letter, emphasizing tribes are sovereign nations with unique political status and are not special interest groups. Tribal leaders across the country are seeking to build a relationship with Secretary of the Interior Doug Burgum. He was confirmed by the U.S. Senate last week. The former governor of North Dakota received support from the five tribes in his state. According to North Dakota U.S. Senator John Hoeven, Burgum received support from more than 185 tribes. During his confirmation hearing in January, tribes were mentioned several times. He was questioned about tribal sovereignty and tribal consultation. Here's how Burgum described working with tribes.
Tribal consultation to me as governor of North Dakota has meant actually spending time and going to the tribes, listening, sometimes listening for hours to really understand what the issues are, and then in getting to people ahead of time, and then working on things that are important.
Burgum highlighted one area of concern in his state to improve public safety, saying he helped achieve agreements with tribes on law enforcement. Much of his hearing focused on energy development, but conservation and protection of sacred sites were touched on. Tribal leaders are hopeful he'll bring his work on government-to-government relationships and his knowledge of Indian country to his position as Interior Secretary, as he now oversees the agency in charge of Indian affairs and the management of public lands. Housing shortages and overcrowding affect most of Alaska, and the North Slope is no exception. In particular, the remote region faces additional logistical challenges, but also unique economic opportunities. That was the takeaway from a recent North Slope Borough Housing Summit held in Anchorage. The event highlighted affordable ways for residents to buy or build homes in the Arctic. Jack France is the director of the Borough Housing Department. He says that homes in the region are falling apart faster than new ones are being built.
You also hear about it when you have, you know, a young adult that wants to stay on the North Slope but has to move down to one of the lower cities just because of lack of housing on the North Slope as well.
France says that the country's most northern region, which is predominantly Alaska Native, is in a unique situation. The remote geography makes shipping and construction challenging and expensive, but he says residents of the oil-rich region also have interest and resources to purchase houses. He says that more than half of the North Slope homes are owned by residents. The Housing Summit aimed to connect potential home buyers to existing financial opportunities. available contractors, and affordable ways to ship supplies. For example, he says summit panelists discussed how residents and entities could form a co-op and order supplies together to cut shipping costs.
When you talk about economies of scale, generally just more you order, the bigger discount you get.
The borough plans to put together a guide listing banks and contractors who are looking to work with buyers in the region. They also plan to present a report on the summit during Kivyuk, which is a midwinter festival being held this month. They'll also discuss it during future village visits. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs Strauss Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Scoop Dash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods, tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show. Omnye. Support provided by First National Bank Alaska, offering a one-solution, tailored approach to meet the financial needs of Alaskans by providing banking services, loans, investments, and more to help shape a brighter tomorrow. Learn more at fnbalaska.com.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Taking out a small personal loan online only takes a few minutes, but paying it back with exorbitantly high annual percentage rates can lock people into a cycle of debt with long-term consequences. High-interest lenders are partnering with tribes to try and avoid the growing number of state regulations cracking down on their business. But states are having some success in shutting those down, prompting concerns over infringement on sovereignty. Tribes say their online lending services are filling a need for people who can't get traditional bank loans or who just don't trust the banking system. In this hour, we'll talk with financial experts about the balance between tribal sovereignty and responsible lending. Have you ever used a payday lender? If so, how did it work for you? Let us know by calling 1-800-996-2848. Are affordable consumer loans and lending services available in your community? Call us 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's now meet today's guests. Joining us from Albuquerque, New Mexico is Natalie Martin. She's a law professor at the University of New Mexico School of Law. Natalie, hello, and welcome back to Native America Calling.
Great to talk to you, Sean.
Great to talk to you as well, Natalie. Joining us from Seattle, Washington is Barry Brandon. He's a commissioner for the Muscogee Nation Office of Public Gaming. He's also a member of the Muscogee Creek Nation. Barry, good morning. Welcome back to the show as well.
You for inviting me. Appreciate it.
You bet. You bet, Barry. And our third guest joins us from Isleta Pueblo, New Mexico, Miranda Lenti. She is a loan officer for Tiwa Lending Services. She's also a member of Isleta Pueblo. Miranda, you've also been on the show before. Welcome back. Good to have you.
Good morning, Sean. It's great to be back.
It's great to have all of you on the show. And Natalie, I want to begin with you, and let's cut to the chase here. Native nations operating online lending companies that can charge annual percentage rates of up to 600%, how are they challenging state laws?
Yes. So, how are they challenging state laws? So now over half of the states have passed usury limits or interest rate caps, and those are generally somewhere between 36% and 18%. And so the loans, which you said, run up to 600%, and I think they might even be a little higher, basically violate those state laws.
Okay, now, from the lender's side, they say, look, if borrowers just pay the loan back like they're supposed to, within maybe a two-week cycle, something like that, less than a month, the fee is reasonable for the amount of risk that the business is taking. Is that a fair business model in your view?
Well, most of the loans are now a little bit longer, Sean, so maybe a month or more. to me, the problem is that most people can't get out of the loan in whatever the period is, so they end up rolling the loan over, and it ends up being more of a long-term loan than a short-term loan. And so, no, I understand that there are times when people really do need money, but I think that these end up causing more harm than good, and I've been studying them for about 15 years in various forms. Most people, once they get this extra bill, they find it really hard to pay their other bills. And sometimes the loans, you know, they're out in Navajo Nation, for example, there were loans where they were charging 1,000% and people were borrowing 100 and being asked to pay back 1,000 over a year. So they can be quite pernicious and difficult for people to pay back.
An analogy I've heard used before is taking a taxi cab, and most people use taxi cabs for short trips. And even though if you broke it down by the mile, it's kind of expensive, it's a short trip, so it's not a huge deal in your pocketbook. But if you were to take a taxi cab, for example, from Albuquerque, New Mexico to Los Angeles, California, it would be insanely expensive. It would be ridiculously expensive. And I've heard similar comparisons with these loans you're describing. They have interest rates that are attractive from a short-term perspective, but most people aren't borrowing with a short-term frame of mind or a short-term profile. Is that accurate?
Yes. And the other problem, I think, is that you hear frequently from the industry that they're used mostly for emergencies. But just to throw something on top of this issue of it being long-term, many people are using the loans for regular expenses. And so it just becomes another bill. And when you're already behind on a lot of bills, this is really, you know, really, really causing, you know, like you said, a long-term financial problem or exacerbating one.
So, Natalie, if state law doesn't apply to tribes, how are some states able to close down these payday loan operations on tribal land?
Yeah, very good question. And I want to first just also say that, you know, I understand there's a lot of different opinions on this. And unfortunately and sadly, this issue pits two very compelling interests against one another, the tribe's ability to self-govern and raise the funds that the tribe needs versus the state's obligation to protect citizens from harm. And so what's happened is you've got a number of courts that have now held that, you know, these online loans are off-reservation activity, and that the state has the right to protect their citizens from activity that is occurring not on tribal land. So that's basically where the law has gone with this. Obviously, it's very different on tribal land. But when pitting sort of the public policy of protecting citizens against the tribe's self-determination, these states, for the most part, have held that this off-reservation activity can be governed, can be regulated by the state to protect citizens.
Now, you mentioned earlier the state of New Mexico capped loan interest rates at 36% in 2023. How hard was it for lawmakers to do that?
I was involved for at least a decade. And then many other people were involved after my sort of tenure and working on it. So pretty difficult. You know, you hear the same arguments that, you know, that I think industry often makes, that basically people need these products and that they are better off having access to it if they need it. And so being a poor state took us a long time. Other states like Montana and Nebraska and Arizona had passed their payday loan regulations way before we did, even though those are red states.
How hard was the pushback from the payday lending industry there in New Mexico during that whole process there at the legislature?
It every year it was bad. You know, it just kept happening. I even had somebody ask me to a meeting, one of the industry lobbyists to try to keep me out of the roundhouse. There are just the amount of money that is paid to the lobbyists in those industries is so high that, there's a lot of pushback, from the lobbyists. So you've got people in the legislature that are making, you know, the decision to take these funds, and then they don't feel like they can really you know, push back. And that was a big part of the problem.
Here we are now, 2 years later, it's 2025. New Mexico residents, can they still go online and take out loans from tribal lenders in a different state and possibly be charged more than that 36% cap?
Well, sure. Yeah, there's nothing to stop people from doing that. And that's exactly why Minnesota just did that settlement with Lac des Flambeaux, because, you know, the Minnesota Attorney General saw that people were taking out the loans. And so, yeah, but there's free access in terms of the web, as far as I know.
That legal approach that Minnesota used there with Lac des Flambeaux, is that possibly a model going forward for states getting around tribal sovereignty?
Well, I think people are going to look at that and see whether they, you know, other states are certainly taking a look at that. You know, we may even be doing that as well. But definitely, yeah, that is one model. And it was a settlement. So, you know, we'll see what happens from here on out. That's just one tribe, of course, too. Mm. But yes, I think it is a model.
What about the federal government? Do they have any say at all or any motivation to establish any sort of cap on annual percentage rates for loans?
Motivation at the moment, I would say no. there's one group that is protected by a federal statute, and that is military personnel. And they have the same cap we do. In fact, a lot of states are using that Military Lending Act as sort of a model when they're passing their state caps. So you can't lend for more than 36% to a military person, and that's the only federal law on the subject. Other than that, the feds have sort of left this up to the states.
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, that has been an agency that is, there's been a lot of back and forth between different presidential administrations. They were very much reduced in their regulatory role under the Trump administration. And when Biden came in, they were able to play more of a regulatory role. What's their say in all of this, and what power do they have in terms of regulation at this point?
Yeah, great question. So the CFPB can't set interest rates, but they can regulate like unfair and deceptive practices. And so, yes, what happened under Trump last time, it looks like it's happening again. It looks like today he fired the head of the Consumer Protection Agency. Before that, though, they were pretty active. And I believe the case was called Think Finance that they brought, where there was a tribal entity involved. There were also a lot of other entities involved. And they were very, very aggressive in terms of enforcing these, you know, the right to fight back against, you know, problematic business practices. I'm not expecting much right now, to be honest.
All right. Natalie Martin, kicking off our conversation here on Native America Calling today. She is a law professor at the University of New Mexico in Albuquerque. And phone lines are open if anybody would like to join the conversation. Maybe you have some experience with payday loans or programs that are designed to provide affordable lending options for tribal members. Give us a call. Share your insights. 1-800-99-NATIVE.
A new novel by a Sami writer depicts the harrowing experiences of five children in the Swedish equivalent of U.S. boarding schools and how that trauma surfaces when they are adults. We hear from journalist and author Anne Helene Lestadius about her book Punished on the next Native America Calling.
What if education reflected the needs of your community? The NACA Inspired Schools Network supports Native communities by creating schools that are community-led and are rooted in academic relevance, identity development, and holistic wellness for their children. Ready to transform Indigenous education? The NISN School Design Fellowship is accepting community letters of interest through January 31st at nacainspiredschoolsnetwork.org. NACA Inspired Schools Network supports this show.
Thank you for listening to Native America Calling. We're talking about high interest loans, sometimes called payday or consumer finance loans. Some states are cracking down on payday loan companies that partner with tribes, and you can join the conversation. Just call 1-800-996-2848. Tell us, does your tribe's business profile include online lending? The number is also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Before we bring Barry Brandon into the conversation, I want to go back to Natalie Martin for one more question. And Natalie, you talked earlier about the settlement between the state of Minnesota and the Wisconsin-based tribe Lac du Flambeau. Can you give us a little bit more information on what it took to achieve that settlement for the state? I think our listeners would benefit from that.
Yeah, I don't actually know what it took, but I know it takes a lawsuit, obviously, and I don't think that the tribe would settle unless they thought that there was a decent chance that, you know, they weren't going to win. And so I don't know too much about the specifics of that particular settlement, but again, it's a situation where you have an attorney general, you know, trying to protect its citizens against loans that are illegal in that state, and of course, the tribe, you know, has its own interests, which we'll hear from Barry. But those were the legal issues that were involved. You know, does the state have the right to protect citizens in this activity that courts have consistently found to be, you know, off-reservation activity?
Thank you, Natalie. Barry Brandon, Commissioner for the Muscogee Nation Office of Public Gaming, he joins us now. Barry, the legal challenges that we're talking about today, how are they impacting the online tribal lending business?
Well, let me say this first. I have not been actively involved in the short-term lending. I was heavily involved 10 years ago. I was the executive director of NAFSA, which is the Native American Financial Service Association. And I was actually the one that took the lead in creating that association. And that association was created by tribal leaders who understood, really, from the example of gaming, that whatever a tribe does, whatever Indians do in this country, is going to be under more scrutiny than if any other entity. And obviously, it's because of our unique status as nations. But they knew that there would just be a period of time before people were coming after them. And I think at the time that they contacted me, they were already chomping at the bit to come get them. And so the tribal leadership of the tribes that were involved, not all of them, but a majority of them, came together and said, we need to create our own association that helps create some standards with respect to how we conduct our businesses so that we could make legitimate arguments with respect to the regulation of it. So anyway, that's what they did. And NAFSA was very successful in the early days of getting NCAI to sign a resolution in support of tribes who, under their sovereignty, had chosen to enter into that area of business. And numerous other groups chimed in as well as individual tribes around the country. So that helped. I'm giving you a little bit of the early history in terms of how we got to where we got today. But, you know, they came after the tribes. And interestingly, they didn't come through the front door. They do what you want to do when you want to exterminate Indians. You attack sources that keep them alive. So we learned that. In fact, I wrote an article, an opinion piece that appeared in the Wall Street Journal. explaining what the federal government was doing. They weren't coming after the tribes directly. What they were doing was all the people they were doing business with, they were threatening to shut them down or to fine them. Banks and other people who process these loans just stopped doing business in Indian country. And that was their attempt. It's called Operation Choke Point. You can go back and it's been written about a lot. But, you know, that was the way they were trying to get to them. And, you know, we met with the Justice Department and Interior, and we were meeting with everyone, and, you know, even the Justice Department, you know, failing. Oh, we don't know anything about it. Well, the history shows they knew everything about it because they put it in place. But that was how they came after the tribe. So anyway, so now you have the you know, the tribes afraid because they weren't going after the tribes directly, but they were putting tribes out of business of doing this because it wasn't profitable anymore. So with all that said, I'll take a breath and remind me of the question.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, because I think a lot of our listeners are probably thinking, okay, so a tribe wants to start some sort of a payday lending business. They want to do it online. How profitable is the model, and what all is involved? What does it take? I imagine there's a call center. I imagine you've got some sort of underwriting process, but maybe give us some details in terms of how a typical online tribal business, tribal lending, payday lending business is structured, and what it takes to get it up and going.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the first question is, why the heck would Indians even be interested in it? Well, As I always saw, my previous experience before being at the Gaming Commission for the Creek Nation was that I worked at Justice, I worked at Interior, I was the general counsel of the National Indian Gaming Commission, I was a partner at the Aiken Gump Law Firm in D.C. doing strictly work on behalf of tribes. So I've seen it from all perspectives, and it's like, you know, why is it? Because people go, why is it that Indians do all these things? They sell tobacco, they open casinos, they sell gas, which is killing our atmosphere. They're doing all these things. And, you know, my answer to that was, frequently tribes look at soft spots. They look for areas that are highly regulated or unregulated to move into them pursuant to their sovereignty. And I think if you talk with a lot of tribal leaders, they're like, that are involved in this industry, they would tell you it wouldn't be my first choice. But at some point, particularly those tribes that are displaced geographically, not to them because that's their homeland, but they're not on I-5 or I-90 where they open gigantic casinos and generate, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for the tribal government. And so it's really hard for them to find business. And if you look at the history, you will see that most of the tribes that got in at the very beginning, they're all small tribes that were located away from metropolitan areas, that were in more rural areas. And this gave them the ability, as the tribal leaders would say, is to export our sovereignty outside, you know, the reservation. And, you know, that's the way they viewed it. And kind of under the idea that, you know, this business is legal. It's happening everywhere else. If we do it, why don't we create our own rules and codes for regulation and Truth in Lending Act requirements and all those types of things? And that's what they did, or that's what NAFSA did. And in order to be a member, you had to show the association that you had all these things in place, which was, you know, the attempt to legitimize it. I guess the other point that I would make too on that is, you know, when tribes got into gaming, the tribes didn't have any money at all. So if you wanted to go into gaming, you had to spend a lot of money. Tribes are considered subprime borrowers. So, you know, because they can't leverage their land. And so it's basically based upon, you know, their income flow of the tribe. And so getting a loan from a bank or an investor was very difficult. I know, because I went through it. And in order to get the casinos at the Seneca Nation opened, we had to go to a private investor who loaned us $100 million with a 30% interest rate. that actually we had to explain over and over again, because we went to every bank and every lender, and they did not want to do business with tribes.
Okay.
So, you know, as a tribal leader, you start feeling those constrictions. So you look for an opportunity. This was one. It didn't require a huge capital investment. You didn't have to build a big casino or a hotel. You could do this and locate it on the nation's or on the tribal's property. You could, using the web to export this, and it was a much cheaper way to get into business than the other ways.
So, okay. Barry, a much cheaper way, but at the same time, it sounds like there are still non-tribal business partners who are helping these tribes to a fairly large extent. And that's some of the criticism. It's these non-native business interests that are coming in and perhaps exploiting the opportunity of tribal sovereignty to create these online business models, these lending models that could potentially be harmful to consumers. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, no, that is. And, you know, again, kind of harking back, because I was involved in the gaming industry, think about the early days of gaming when tribes had no money. So they had to find somewhere to borrow it. So they were paying exorbitant fees on that, just getting the money. Then they had to pay for everything inside the casino. They had a building, then they had to pay for everything inside there. Mm-hmm. They had to hire employees, you know, and they, you know, then, you know, when states figured out how they could, you know, falsely or unlawfully tax tribes by, you know, revenue shares, you know, the state had started taking, you know, 25% of what the tribe was making. So when you break all that down, I always say that you want to see who made, you know, it's the National Indian, you know, it's the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, but the people, and it was for the economic development of Indian country, but the people making money on it were banks. They made way more than the tribes did.
Okay.
And I didn't see anyone at that time jumping up and down going, this is not fair to the tribes, or the federal government even stepping in. So the states have, I would love for somebody to do the study on how much states have taken out of the gaming coffers. So that's just a long way of saying that I think tribes realize that this will get us in the door. And all the leaders that I talked to said, it's just like gaming, because we want to take all these guys out. And there are some tribes who have successfully done that, who have bought every vendor who is providing a service, the tribe has bought them, and they are now owned by the tribe. So it's all owned by the tribe. That was the original model. But you are correct. There are still tribes out there that are paying, you know, a lot of money. But you will also talk to tribal leaders who say, but for this short-term online lending, it provides 90% of our tribal budget. And so for a tribal leader to look at it that way, they can see that there's money to be made, but it's not a short-term game. It's like, it's a long-term. How are we going to get out and take bigger and bigger chunks? And the tribes that have bought out their service providers provide a great example of how you can do that. You have to have good leadership and smart people to help you make those decisions. But anyway, but you are right. It's still going on.
Barry, you talked earlier about the standards that you helped draft for NAFSA, standards with which payday lending businesses, tribal online payday lending businesses, can operate. Has there been any discussion at all about tribes voluntarily enacting their own interest rate caps, or in any way structuring these loans so they're a little bit more consumer friendly?
Yeah, there's always that discussion, because obviously that's the main issue with states is, you know, the interest rates. Again, tribes are, exercising their right to do that. What you'll hear from them is, look, this is an online business. Nobody's going to their door and choking them and saying, you got to borrow money from us. It's done, and there's a requirement for a Truth in Lending Act, so people can see how much they're borrowing, how much with the interest that's going to be charged, what their final amount would be. Everyone who's bought a car has seen a Truth in Lending Act. So it gives you some idea of how much you're going to pay through the term of the loan. The other part of that is the default rate on these short-term loans are astronomical. So that's that risk and reward. I mean, it's a high-risk business. A lot of people do pay their loans, but if you were to look at the statistics of defaults by, you know, through the tribal data, it's huge that they don't get paid back for. And they realize that a lot of consumers can just basically turn their back and say, screw it. I mean, we're not going to pay you. You don't have any really right to come after us for any of this. So that's the balancing act of the sovereignty, the generation of revenues, you know, I mean, it's everything that anything that tribes get involved with has going on. It's always much more complicated than for non-tribal entities.
Okay. And I'm glad you mentioned the risky nature of these types of loans, Barry, because that's certainly very relevant in the conversation. And I do want to pivot back to Natalie Martin, though. And Natalie, we heard Barry mention these truth in lending statements, and anybody who's ever applied for a loan or you see that notice on there. But I'm curious, how effective are those truth in lending statements in terms of really making consumers aware of the risks that they're taking with some of these lending products?
So they're not very effective in that way. Like, the consumers don't necessarily read them. However, that's where you get the right to bring a lawsuit. So it's an incredibly important provision. But I'm so sorry, Sean, I just want to address one or two very brief things talking to Barry. The Gaming Act requires that tribes get 70 to 60% of the revenues from the industry or from the, you know, the gaming enterprise. Here, that's not required. So this is a big problem. I mean, tribes right now are getting 1 to 5% of the loans. The other 99% is making some other people, some non-tribal people, really, really, really wealthy. And the tribes, I know this is important income. I totally am aware of how much the tribes need it, but that really bothers me. And, you know, it's to charge 800% interest and pitting one group of sort of economically disadvantaged group against another, mostly so that a lot of non-natives can get really well off. Last thing, I think these NAFTA regulations don't cap interest rate. It's apparently legal to, you know, charge 8% interest. I don't know. And in terms of the crackdown, what Barry was calling Operation Choke Point, that crackdown was going on against everyone at the same time, all people who were using these banking systems. So people who are operating offshore, all these other online payday lenders. It wasn't just tribes. And thank you. Sorry.
All right. Well, thank you, Natalie. We're going to take another break. When we come back, I'm going to let Barry respond. And then after that, we're going to move on to Miranda Lenti, who is a loan officer with Tiwa Lending Services. And she's going to talk about some other options outside of payday loans that can help folks who might need to borrow money. So stay with us. And if you'd like to join the conversation, all you have to do is call us 1-800-996-2848. 1-800-996-2848. That's the phone line. That'll connect you with our studio in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and we'll get your comments on the air.
Program support by AmeriCorps Vista, where you can kickstart your career and help others in your community. With AmeriCorps Vista, you can serve in an office setting and address issues of poverty while gaining career experience and building your leadership skills. Learn more by visiting AmeriCorps.gov/Vista today. That's AmeriCorps.gov/Vista. Repatriation is the return of ancestors and stolen culture. The Association on American Indian Affairs and the Tunica Biloxi Tribe will host the 10th Annual Repatriation Conference February 25th, 26th, and 27th, 2025 in Marksville, Louisiana. The conference will provide expert hands-on training about domestic and international repatriation. Registration and more information available at Indian-Affairs.org. The Association on American Indian Affairs supports this show. The Alaska
the Native Art Auction Gala is March 21st, 2025 in Anchorage, Alaska. Please consider donating art and help Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation raise needed funds. Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation's mission is to be the leader in bringing Native voices to Alaska and the nation. With your support, we're able to produce such programs as National Native News, Native America Calling, and more. Donor forms and more information about the auction can be found at knba.org. Anyone who donates art before February 14th will be automatically entered into a drawing to win $500. Native Forward Scholars Fund scholarships are open now. Native Forward supports Native students' higher education journeys, offering over 40 scholarship opportunities, programs, and resources designed for Native students. Info and applications at nativeforward.org, who support this show. DT Track, your healthcare partner, provides access to a nationwide network of qualified healthcare temporary staff, including medical billing professionals that optimize your revenue cycles. More at dt-track.com, who support this show.
Thank you for listening to Native America Calling. There is still time if you'd like to join our conversation about high-interest online tribal lending. We're also talking about lending alternatives and what it takes to get out of debt. Is paying down credit card balances and lowering debt one of your New Year's resolutions? Let us know. You can call 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. I want to go back to Barry Brandon, Commissioner for the Muscogee Nation Office of Public Gaming. And Barry, before we move on to our next guest, I'd like you to respond and any closing thoughts or comments with regard to online tribal lending businesses, the industry at whole. And we heard Natalie mention earlier that the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act requires that tribes receive at least 70% of gaming profits, but apparently that same number does not apply with these online loans we're talking about. It sounds like tribes are lucky if they can even get 5% of the profits. So any other additional insights you can add, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, no, the professor is correct. That's exactly what the act requires. But what you have to remember is it's what's left of what is left after you pay your lenders, after you pay all your vendors. And when you see how many vendors an average casino has, it's enormous. It's everything from whether you have your own security, you have to create a gaming commission, you have to do this, and most of those commissions are funded by the tribe and out of those funds. And so that number, whatever the gross revenue is for the tribe under gaming, it shrinks substantially. And so if you get 30%, but you only made $100, you get $30. So, I mean, that's the difference, is that, yes, it does say that. It also had a clause in there that said states shall not tax Indian gaming. It also has a clause that says that, you know, if they refuse to negotiate a compact, that tribes could sue the state, which they did, and went to the Supreme Court and got over it, and they struck that portion of IGRA. So there's no protection from the state. The percentages that you're going to pay back to your tribe is often the lowest one on the totem pole with respect to what everyone else is making off the business. You are employing some of your tribal members and providing health care and those things, but that's putting it in kind of, okay, how much do tribes make out of all that gross number, how much did they actually put in their pocket? And I think most people would be very surprised that, you know, because those percentages are for management companies that would come in and manage the facility. So if they get 30% off the top, and then you got to pay everyone else because they brought everyone else along.
So one essentially these online payday lending business, it sounds like they're just a model that has much lower overhead than a casino.
Correct. It does. Much lower. And also with respect to Operation Choke Point, that is correct. It applied to everyone. But all those other entities it applied to, they weren't sovereign nations. They were businesses. So if you're going to come after Indian country, our view was, look, we're a sovereign entity. You have a government-to-government relationship with us. Why aren't you dealing with us? We went into the CFPB to talk with our top lawyers who was leading the charge, at least from that agency. None of them knew Indian law at all. We literally had to write a white paper on basic Indian law because they didn't believe what we said. they didn't believe that that tribes had any authority or jurisdiction over their land and their people. And so that's how low it was in terms of importance. It was like, hey, pass a law, we can do whatever we want. And as most Indian lawyers will tell you, not so fast. You know, there's 200 years of information out there in terms of how we got to where we got. So that's the difference is, and that's what we argued is, you know, we're not like, you know, Bank of America. We're a sovereign nation, and if you're going to do something that affects our business, you have an obligation to come in and talk to us about it, not just shut our businesses down and say, see you later. So anyway, those are the two responses I'd have. So, but I mean, I agree. I mean, everything was stated is correct.
Okay.
I mean, it's correct, but I was just giving you kind of point counterpoint. So.
Yeah. Appreciate it, Barry, very much. And anyone who'd like to join this conversation, and it's a good conversation right now, just dissecting the ins and outs of these tribal online payday businesses. Maybe you have one operating in your community, or maybe you've gotten a loan from one of these places. We'd really like to hear your thoughts. Did it work out for you? Do you think this is a valuable service in your community, or do you think it's an exploitative business model? Give us a call. Share your insights. Share your experience. 1-800-996-2848. And with that, let's bring Miranda Lenti into the conversation. She is in Isleta Pueblo, New Mexico. She is with the Tiwa Lending Services CDFI, Community Development Financial Institution. And Miranda, I imagine there's probably people listening to the show right now, and they're hearing a lot of these legal arguments and some of these issues with sovereignty, and they're just thinking to themselves, well, that's all important, but right now I'm more concerned about my own debts, the credit card debts that I have, or maybe some loans that I'm having a hard time paying off. So can you help us out here? What is the first step for someone with significant debt, maybe some dings on their credit report, but they don't have access to traditional bank loans?
Yes, Sean, I was just thinking and wanted to thank Barry and Natalie for the advocacy that they have, because I am more on the front end of things. And, you know, we get to view new regulations or new laws that go into place, but I don't deal with any of the advocacy too much of what Natalie and Barry have done. So I just want to thank them, because it, you know, it leads to the way our organization can work. You know, if someone's fighting on the back end for Indian country, and it can help us do our work here on the front end of lending. So what's hard is tribal members and anyone who's Indian country and community don't have access to an organization maybe like ourselves, where we put community in the work we do, and the way we can have conversation with a borrower is you're not just an application number or just, you know, a way for us to get back interest into our program. You are a client that we want to work with. What are your goals that you're setting financially? What's stopping you from getting there? How can we help? What sources and guidance can we provide you to get to that goal? Because even though you borrow, let's just say the credit builder loan from us, even though you borrow that from us and you pay it back, we still want to see how else we can help you. Is your goal homeownership, or like you mentioned, getting out of debt? What are resources we have that we can help you? I think that's what we can do, is provide that guidance to say you're not alone in this, because when it comes to looking at finances, it's already intimidating or it's already stressful for someone, right? You pull out how much you make and all your expenses, and if you are dealing with any payday lenders, those can eat at your paychecks every 2 weeks or monthly, or you see the balance isn't going down. And there's a lot of helpful resources now, too. Like you mentioned, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has a lot of resources as well, templates and sheets that people can utilize to help them with their budgeting or with their savings, or even just like we're a HUD certified counseling agency, so we can do intakes of individuals' financial situation and see how we can help.
Miranda, there at Tiwa Lending, I know you folks are working with a lot of community members. You're pulling credit reports. You're helping people go through their finances. When you come across folks who have these payday loans or these predatory loans, what do they tell you about them? Why did they take them out? And are they causing these long-term problems where they're just not able to pay them back and they're being cycled into more loans and additional debts?
Yes, so we actually have helped a lot of tribal members refinance some of those loans. And mostly the reason is, the most reason is because, of course, it's fast money and they did have an emergency. I know that was mentioned earlier. There's an emergency and it can be fast money. And there are still tribal members even who within our community who haven't heard about us yet. And we're like, oh, if I could have chosen to go through you first, you know, you guys would have been the first stop, which is okay because we can help with the refinancing. And some of them struggle with paying it back faster than they expected because of the high interest rate. And also a piece of it is the marketing. A lot of tribal members have shared that, you know, they go to ABC company and get the loan for, you know, $1,000 and they're paying it back and now their balance is a little higher. Well, ABC company will come back and say, hey, you could add you know, an extra $500 to your line of credit. Do you want to come in? They either do that by calling, sending letters, or even I've heard of some payday lenders texting their clients. And so some of this marketing, you know, can come at a vulnerable time where it might just be easy to say, hey, that extra $500 could help me. So, you know, they kind of contact me at a good time and, you know, they might take that offer, but not know that the interest will still continue to be high.
All right. Yeah. So that marketing really comes into play. That's a good point, Miranda. Let's say somebody's listening to the show right now and they've got a financial emergency. Maybe they had a vehicle breakdown or maybe they got laid off from a job and they really need a few hundred dollars just to get them through the next payday, for example. And they're tempted, Miranda. Maybe they're going online and they're seeing these online payday loan businesses. What types of alternatives are there, either through your organization or other CDFIs, that might be a better option than going online and borrowing money at a really high annual percentage rate?
Yeah, so if they have CDFIs that are within their community, that definitely is a good alternative because the goal and mission of most CDFIs is to help the clients, not help the organization make money back in fees or interest. It's taking that, okay, you have an emergency, we can lend you, you know, X amount of dollars, and here's what an interest rate would look like. There's more transparency and more comfortability for the clients because it's not just this fast turnaround of like, yeah, sign here, and you're at, you know, 100% interest rate. It's actually being more transparent. And so going and looking for, you know, credit builder loans, and that's kind of the emphasis is credit builder, something that is a small amount of money, but with the goal of building your credit, but not also not hurting you. And a lot of times tribal members may get a little too intimidated to ask the loan officer or the creditor who they're working with questions. Ask questions. What is my total payback? How many fees were added to the loan? What's my actual principal balance? That way you leave feeling more comfortable and you have more control over how you want to tackle the debt if you had to get into it.
Miranda, what about the timeline? Because I know one of the appealing facts about many of these payday loans is you can get the money within an hour or 2 hours, the same day. Are these credit building loans and other products you're describing, is there a fast turnaround like that as well?
It may just be dependent on the organization. So like for us, we can do a fast turnaround of maybe like within 2 days because we do verifications. We want to make sure we don't hurt the client. So we want to verify job employment. We want to verify and review their credit, review it with them, and then we have our own bookkeeping. So with credit builder loans, it may or may not be this fast turnaround, but I see where that vulnerability comes in of I need this money now.
Okay. And it sounds like there's an education component involved as well. You're actually counseling these folks and giving them some additional insights.
Yes. What we do is we review their credit report, see what's reporting. We see what their scores are. We let them know the three sections to the credit report and what accounts are in each one. You know, just kind of asking what their goal are. Are they aware of what's being reported on their credit report? You know, what happened here? We saw some late dates or you had a collection pop up. Were you aware? So we do a lot of overview. So we're not just saying, hey, sign here, here's your check. It's that component piece of community to say, hey, well, if you have questions in the future about your credit report, let us know. Or is this something you want to work on the next time you come in the office? So there's a whole counseling one-on-one piece to it. So that way they, again, they learn to trust us, and we make a relationship with them. Why should I pay back TWA Lending Services? Well, it's because we're here to help you. We're not here to hurt you, and we built this reviewing your finances, not just a number. You're actually a borrower and a client for us to work with in the long run.
Thank you, Miranda. We have time for one call today, and it is a good one. Chanupa up in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, listening on Keeley Radio. Hello, big brother. You are on the air.
You know, I wanted to tell you something to three special women, okay? One of them was my teacher. She was my aunt. Her name was Lima Martin. And the other one was Lovie Tubles. And then the third one was Julia Spark. Julia Spark used to work in Washington, D.C. But the thing that they did, the Oglala Sioux tribe back then, they fought our schools, our children. We had to get it on with them. So I did. I led that understanding for our children. And so one of the schools turned around and turned it back to the people. So the education system went back to our people. And so that was a beautiful thing they did. And so with our children and Aunt Lima, Lovie, and Georgia Spark, I love all of you because you're the ones that represented the children. You did the children. And thanks to all of you on the Pine Ridge Indian River for what you did. Like we say, so that's what we did for representing our people. Wopila on you, Sean. And thank you again, Sean. We'll see you again. Ha-ho!
Thank you, Chanupa. I really appreciate that call coming in from Pine Ridge, South Dakota. And we're just about to wrap up the show. Miranda, I want to give you the last word. We've got about 30 seconds. Any other information you'd like to share about these community development financial institutions like TWA Lending where you work?
Yes, what makes us different from other lenders is we have more creative underwriting, and we again put in the community in our work because we want to see the communities thrive. So we're not just the traditional lender. We get to do products and programs that will benefit who walks in the door. Make sure we're not in this box of bank institution or payday lender. We're this other on the outside, not in the checkbox. We're on the outside doing what we can to make it affordable, make it beneficial to the clients.
All right. Thank you so much, Miranda. We are going to have to wrap up the conversation now. Thank you to our three guests on the show today, Miranda Linty, Natalie Martin, and Barry Brandon. Join us tomorrow for a special literary feature, Native Bookshelf, featuring Sami author Anne Helene Lestadius and her book, Punished. I'm Sean Spruce. We'll talk again soon.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org. See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Support by AARP. If someone asks you to buy gift cards to pay off debt, it's a scam. Imposters will claim your Social Security number's at risk, or your utility company will stop service due to late payments, or you won the lottery and only need to pay some upfront costs. They'll say the fastest way is to buy gift cards and share the numbers on the back. Anyone who tells you to pay a debt with a gift card is a scammer. More information on gift card scams at aarp.org/giftcards.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.